Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, and I'm joined by Mr. Jason Anthony at Booms62. Jason, we are getting close to Vegas, close to the Soul Series, and close to opening day. How are you feeling about everything? Any crazy feelings as we get close to everything going?
What up, Vlad? Only crazy feelings for me is just excitement. Hard to believe main event draft start less than a week. I think Matty Mo texted out today. It's coming quick.
Yeah, that's right. It's happening really quickly. In a couple of weeks, we'll be in Vegas. We're recording on Tuesday evening, March the 5th, and there's a lot going on in the baseball world right now. We are incredibly volatile to every little bit of news, every home run, every five walks by Tanner Scott that are occurring lately, and we are making market moves because of it. And some of it will end up being the correct move. Some of it is we're kind of overdoing it. But I think some things are clear, right? Like a Lucas Giolito, he's off our draft board. But I mean, like Wyatt Langford, right? This guy that we know is already a top prospect. There's word that we discussed last week that he was almost going to be on the playoff roster, on the World Series roster for the Rangers last year. And then he goes off, has like a two home run game, and his ADP is flying from like 170 in January, 140 in February. We're now in March, and he's cleaning up around 100 with like a max of 60 something. Like, and this isn't even crazy because we do this every year. We just have like a short term memory, right? Like, because every single year we have these group of players that we're doing this with, right? Jordan Walker last year, whoever, all these examples, we can go back, a decade.
It makes me sad I didn't draft him earlier. I'd love to have a couple Langford shares in the 120s, 130s. It's crazy. I'd like to think that we moved the needle on him, but I don't believe it was us. I just believe it's him hitting home runs in spring. But he's not going to be the only one. There's going to be some more injuries, some more buzzy things. Some rookie's going to make the team we haven't been talking about, and he's going to jump up, 100 picks here come main event season.
Yeah, and then we had the little scare with Ronald Acuna. Everybody was just like ready to, just very scared, and rightfully so. But we kind of knew like these things just don't go as planned. This is baseball. It just seemed to we were sailing too smoothly with just like the advantage of having the number one pick, right? And this is just lock it in. 160 games, 60 steals, right? I mean, anything can happen. And now the conversation is, oh my God, is he going to run? Is he still worth the first pick? There were a couple of days where we saw him going 3-4 for the first time. What do you make of it? You're taking him at one no matter what, right?
I'm taking him at 1, 2, 3, and 4. I loved your tweet that said, if you pass on Acuna with a one pick, you're not getting another one. It's just how it is. we have a short-term memory, as fantasy baseball players. Every year there is just absolute carnage going into draft season with injury news, overreaction, underreaction. This guy's hurt. This guy's dinged. How far do I drop him? And start of draft season, we forget about it. We reset and then we get close and like, man, this sucks. But you just got to keep adjusting, find the pockets of value and, have a little, wishful thinking with some of the injuries. With Acuna, he's such an advantage. I think you still have to take him even with the question mark. I got really good news. So I don't think he's going to fall outside of number one other than possibly a Strider going one in some crazy main event.
Yeah, so like even in the latest VDP projections, I mean, we cut off a little bit here. So it's 680 plate appearances, reduced from 700, reduced the stolen base rate a little bit. And still he's popping in with 53 bags, nearly 40 homers, a little over 300. He's still well above the field. So even at like a 53 valuation, you might call that in a standard 15 team 5x5 roto low, because we know that he's still going to be going for 60 plus, maybe 65 plus in some cases. But he is, the gap is closing a little bit. You got Bobby Witt, Julio Rodriguez in the low 40s. I've had some Dodgers actually push up, and no, that's not homerism. It's just a little bit more faith in Ohtani over this last week or so, and just the massive possibility, I mean, of what can be. I refer to the Matt Olson numbers last year, right? Like, these things just have a way of, like, in these teams, any slices you can get of Dodgers and Braves at the top, right? To some extent, Phillies, Yankees, you know, it was the Rangers last year. Like, you just want to load up on these offenses. These offenses that are going to be, you know, they're going to average as a team or collect as a team 6,300 plate appearances, whereas like the A's and White Sox are under 6,000. And I'm kind of talking, you know, kind of macro, but man, that's a lot of plate appearance difference. There are a lot more counting stats to be gained there. So honestly, when in a tie-breaking scenario, just like, don't go for the White Sox or A, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of looking almost fantasy football-esque with the stacking the offenses. It really hasn't been a thing in baseball. I think the first time it really paid off was a couple of years ago when the Blue Jays were playing in Dunedin. And they were not that expensive, and the stack just went nuts. And whoever had that won all the money. Mm-hmm. But you're seeing it more and more. It's hard to stack certain offenses because they're so expensive. But like you said, if it's a tiebreaker, it's much easier to go with a Brave than a White Sox.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now we are going to talk to you all about starting pitching today. There's a lot of players to go through. We're not going to keep you on a marathon pod, so we're going to hit with the high notes. But we're gonna go through the pool, and there have been obviously some changes over the last week. A ton of helium, which means a lot of the boring but solid guys end up sometimes slipping through the cracks. So we'll cover them all today. Just a few housekeeping notes. Over at FTNFantasy.com, we're continuing with our spring training series 2 times a week. Lucas Beery early in the week, Jake Kuchek towards the end. We have a fantastic article that if you are going to the main event in Vegas or you're doing any live drafts, you're going to absolutely want to check this out. It's Mike Magers prepping for the main event. And there's some credible do's and don'ts in there, which some of it you would think is just common knowledge, but people forget. So it's almost like a great checklist. So make sure that you you check that out. And then stay tuned. If you are going to Vegas, the FTN happy hour, we're looking at maybe altering the start time a little bit. You know, obviously if you're not going, this is just kind of fast forward through this, but anyways, it's a little too close up to the start of some drafts at 4 o'clock. So we might move it up by half an hour, but I'll definitely keep you in the loop on that. And we've got a great announcement. It will come next week. And it will come, basically in the tune of someone new joining the team, and you won't be able to guess who it is. I'm pretty damn sure. But it's going to be exciting and it's going to be big. So there's that. FTN Fantasy continuing to build, continuing to grow, and you can still get in with that promo code Seager5, 5% off Seager5. I do hear we're going to be doing a flash sale, something related to NCAA, but it's going to leak into baseball. So there will be something there, a one-time opportunity to get in at a lower rate. That's it. Starting pitchers. Let's start. Strider. Lo and behold, there he is.
He's pretty good. And now he decided to throw a filthy curveball. The best just got better, huh?
Incredible, man. And think about the difference last year with, even with the poor, relative to expectations, ERA, which was closer to 4 than 3. If I recall correctly, Strider still had 40 plus more strikeouts than any other starting pitcher. The only one to hit 20 wins. He was just an absolute beast, and he is the clear 1-1. The question is, by the way, man, this is, I don't know if Maddie would even want to listen to the podcast now, but I'm looking at this picture of Strider and the article. It looks just like him, like with the mustache and everything. Handsome looking pitcher. Spencer Strider, dude, he's an absolute beast. Where do you take him? If you have the 2 or 3 pick, do you consider him taking him in the first round that early?
You got to bump him up at least $1 now because he looks like Matty Wood, right? In an auction value. He's definitely consideration in the first round for me. He's so much better than the next tier that we'll talk about. And this is kind of unique. There's always been 2, 3, 4 guys in that first ace tier. And this year, Strider is clearly in a tier of his own. taking him in the first round can really provide you a really solid start to your pitching, and it'll really allow you to take many other risks as far as pitchers down the road. I'm probably looking at him starting about pick 4 or 5, but I'd have to kind of map out my entire draft strategy to really pull the trigger on him.
And we're talking a little bit more specific to NFBC and to the 15 teamers. Obviously, if you're in a different format type of league with, you know, points, head-to-head categories and things like that, obviously you're not looking to necessarily pop a pitcher that high, even Strider. But if you really have a nice plan mapped out, it could work. And that really has a lot to do with it as well. And one thing I will mention is a lot of times people rest on their laurels when they grab somebody like that. And you already have a little bit of an advantage with Strider there. But if you basically, if you rest on your laurels and you're just like, okay, I'm just going to attack the hitting now because I did spend that early first rounder, I'm giving up some, you know, some counting stats, some, you know, massive first round hitter value. My point is, I think you can be open to other things, right? Like if, you know, you're picking four, you know, one, I'm sorry, say you're picking five, and then you've got the 25 pick. And then, you know, like what I'm saying is keep yourself open to potentially doubling up and then just see how the things play out, because having that true advantage with like really solid ratios and strikeouts and a player on a good team with wins, like you're really putting yourself in a good position. And if your hitters hit and you have guys in the hundreds and the 200s that you feel are heavily undervalued and you load up on those guys, that can be the winning formula. I think the key is not to get too stuck in, oh, these are how boards look, this is how it should go. Nobody knows how it should go. And over the course of history and almost anything in life, and here, even in fantasy baseball, it's zigging when others are zagging. So just keep your open mind and just be, you know, as novel as possible, I think.
Yeah, to your point, kind of lean into where your advantage is. Taking a pitcher in the first round, you're passing on a lot of good hitters, so you think you have to catch up and you need to hammer hitting. You do need to hammer hitting, but you still need to take pitching. You can't wait until round 8 for your number 2 just because you're going to give up your advantage. So what was the point of taking Strider in 1? So you have to continue to draft the pitching and really kind of lean into that advantage if you're going to do that, in my opinion.
In the second tier, you've got essentially what is a clear number 2, and that's in Gerrit Cole. But it's weird how a Gerrit Cole is now he feels like somebody that feels like needs to be moved or shaked, because people aren't just happy. They want to see something new. They want to see something different. They want to have a reason to have somebody pop up ahead of them, because everyone has Cole as his number 2. But don't go for that. I mean, if you're sitting there, middle end of the first round, he's a fantastic first round pick. There's really nothing wrong with it. And it's just so funny that he's kind of just become this boring guy. Okay, great. His strikeout rate went down a few ticks. It wasn't over 30% last year. The ratios were outstanding. I mean, everything about him is phenomenal. And he's going to get some actual run support this year again, at least we would think. So I think Cole is fine. But the gap between him and that next batch of guys I don't think it's all that massive. So with Cole and then Corbin Burns now in Baltimore, you got Zach Wheeler with the new contract in the mix. You got some of the Seattle guys, Castillo and Kirby. You got the Dodgers guys moving up in that tier with Yamamoto and Glass now. And then you got Pablo Lopez. So I think those are pretty much your next tier. And I see a lot of those guys getting bumped up when we get to main event season.
Yeah. Personally, first year in I think I'm a little concerned about Cole. There was some start of some skills decline from just kind of looking underneath the hood. The XFIP in the Sierra were at 3.6 and 3.63, so it definitely didn't. He overproduced his ERA was 2.63, so he was a whole run below that. The CSW was at 27.7, and the swing and strike rate was only at 11.7. So there was a little regression, the K rate down to 9.56. I think that's one of the lowest he's had in his career. That being said, his whip is elite, 0.98. He doesn't walk guys. He gives up some home runs, but he is going to stay around that one whip, and that is such a carrying tool for your ace. So saying I'm a little worried about him is one thing, but I'm definitely not out on him.
Yeah, and that could be like worried in terms of like that he doesn't finish number two overall, which is a, I mean, high probability of that. I mean, there are a lot of pitchers that can come in and overtake that two spot.
Yeah.
Corbin Burns, he's, I don't know, probably tinkering. I mean, are we really worried? There was the he was. Let's think about this for a second. So Corbin Burns was kind of persona non grata in drafts in January and February. Like I looked back, or even December, I looked back at my first DC where I grabbed him in like the third round, which is crazy, like pick 34. And then, oh, he comes to Baltimore. Everything's changed all of a sudden. So everything you thought about Corbin Burns, your concerns are now gone because he's on a team that's probably going to win some more games. And then now, you know, he's just kind of sitting there idle in that range, usually going in the middle of the second. But he's getting a little touched up in spring. But usually we don't, I mean, sharp players don't overthink that, right? I mean, usually unless the velocity is way down or things like that, like it's not that much of a concern, or should it be?
Yeah, I mean, Burns is interesting. That if I'm kind of a narrative guy sometimes, and sometimes burns me, no pun intended.
Haha.
That wasn't even the plan. That worked out nice.
Hey, welcome.
But he had that whole dust up with Milwaukee about going to arbitration and I'm not valued, and started almost pouting. And his first half was really down. He was only K per nine in the first half, was 8.5, and then the second half he kind of flipped a switch and he was back up over 10. So what is he? Is he's pitching for a contract? He's on a fun, good young team. There's a narrative there. He's got a great ballpark with that left field wall. There's a scenario where he ends up the number two pitcher. There's also a scenario where he kind of just levels out as, like you said, a second, third round value.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm interested. I think that I don't think he's the elite number one, like flat out number one, like he was a couple of years ago. But I still think he'll have a good season. I think he'll have one of the lowest earned run averages. One of the few guys that I think can produce an under three. And some of those guys are unpredictable, right? Like we all loved Kyle Bradish. But nobody thought Kyle Bradish was going to produce an ERA under three. So, I mean, these guys come out of nowhere. Speaking of Baltimore there, other guys in that range, how much is Kevin Gausman going to drop? He did what? He played catch with no issue. That's great. But still, anytime we see the world shoulder with a pitcher, we should always usually be concerned.
Yeah, luckily we got another week to 2 weeks of information to come out with Gausman, because he is the strikeouts, the wins, the ERA is very secure if he's making his 31 starts. But if he's making 28 starts, or if he's not himself, the whip's already an issue. How far does he drop? Is he down in the Aaron Nola, Logan Webb, Framber Valdez tier, or does he kind of stay up in the second, third round of value? It's going to be interesting. And then you've got your Dodgers guys with Yamamoto and now Glasnow. It's those guys are just flying up the board. I firmly believe they're both going to be middle of the second, early second round, or late second round picks by the time we get to the big drafts. Big risk, big reward for both of them. How many innings does Yamamoto pitch? It's the big unknown. Can Glasnow get to 140 innings? If he does, he's going to be worth it. If he pitches 100, he's not. So there's
240?
no 140.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 240, he'd be all right too. but yeah, I mean, I think 140 innings, you'd be ecstatic with Glasnow. I have him projected for 131 innings. But he is one of the guys that just elite ratios, elite strikeouts. So there's just a lot of risk. And then you have the Seattle guys with Castillo and Kirby. Kirby's whip, again, is elite. I think he had a 2% walk rate, which is unheard of in baseball. He almost needs to walk a couple more guys just so he's not around the strike zone as much. But if you're drafting him here, you're betting on a big jump in strikeouts, because he's only had a going to have like a, or I think he had 170 something strikeouts last year. That's hard for your ace to have less than a 9 per 9 K rate. And then Castillo's just solid. And so you got a lot of options to move around here.
Yeah, a lot of guys to touch on there. Yeah, Gausman is the concern for me is obviously it's the shoulder, but in this range, I've always kind of been a little hesitant. I don't know if it's some little bias that I have, but for an ace, I really want an elite whip. I don't want a guy that can potentially, I mean, you know, look at me, you know, foo-foo. Oh no, my 1.2 whip. But I mean, it is a real big difference maker when you have guys that can, you know, produce one that's around one. These are, you know, ratios over, you know, 1,000 innings or whatever. I mean, it makes a difference for your fantasy team. So I really want to be super mindful of that. But yeah, I mean, right now, kind of like just, I already kind of wasn't drafting him, so I don't think I'm going to now. Even more so, I like the Seattle guys a lot. This rotation is hot. It's incredible. Luis Castillo feels like he's kind of fallen under the radar. He's kind of like the boring guy there. But he's been incredibly consistent. He came out the gate banging in Seattle 2 years ago when he was came over to the team after the trade deadline, right, I think. And he was incredible at home, just like literally unhittable. But over the last 2 years, his strikeout rate, almost identical, 27% each season. Walk rate, right around 7% each season. Whips around the same. Everything's around the same. And he actually, he threw his four-seamer more last year. And then, of course, got the bump in swinging strike rate, which is insane, which is really nice to see. It was closer to 15%. But, of course, you know, with that comes a higher hard hit rate, higher barrel rate. He's just solid, man. I really like him. George Kirby, this feels like me maybe zagging when others are zigging. So I'm continuously, have him around my top pitchers. And this is not even with a massive strikeout bump. It's because the VDP system is a little bit more sensitive, more, I guess, welcoming to the lower strikeout dominant ratio guys like a Fried, like a Kirby. It helps insulate some of that damage that you're going to eventually take on anyways when you're streaming and having things done to you, which goes back to the Gausman point and sort of the higher whip. So I really, really don't mind taking a guy that maybe gives me a few less strikeouts and then, like, listen, I'll take my Detmers or Severinos and Cannings or whoever. There are guys, like, I'm not super worried if my ace isn't striking out 220 because I feel like I can make up strikeouts better than I can ratios.
Yeah, Castillo's interesting. He's kind of reinvented himself. He used to be a heavy changeup and not a good whip guy coming from Cincinnati, and he's really stabilizing the whip. I think 1-1-0 the last 2 years, and his changeup's not that elite pitch, but his fastball is just dominant. He's really, like you said, that boring guy that I think is really flying under the radar that is just dominant at home. And then you're talking about, you know, the cold weather narrative with him. That's kind of gone in Seattle. So he's another guy I really like. He definitely is interesting to me. And, you know, something I said in the past, whip is such an underrated category. If you don't get it early, you're not catching up late, and you are not fixing that on Fab. So I am personally a whip snob.
Yes, yes. Let's do that. I mean, that's really a theme here, and let's get you everybody as prepped as much as possible. Just kind of just keep banging it into you, and remember, strikeouts are nice. They're one of the categories, but elite ratios are very scarce, very tough to come by, and you will have more problems with them later. It's much easier to project the strikeouts even mid-season with, like, you know, prop bets and Vegas, you know, total run totals and things like that. And pitcher props, like, oh, this guy's, you know, over 6.5 or whatever. You can find those even based on matchups. Like, you start to figure out which are the teams that are striking out more. It's like, oh my gosh, the, you know, whoever, Yankees, oh my God, they're striking out over 35% against lefties over the last, you know, 3 weeks. Okay, let's look at the schedule. Like, there's a lot of ways to take advantage of that over the season. So yeah, let's keep banging that in people's heads, how important that is.
Yeah, Vlad, I smell a new t-shirt coming on from either FTM or RotoWear, whip snob.
Yes.
Make it happen.
Somebody get that done. Let's do it. Let's do it. All right, we got some helium guys in this next range. You know, we touched on the Dodgers. I don't think there's really that much to talk about there. Like, let's just see it happen. Obviously, these are guys that have top five potential. But the next batch is you got Zach Gallen, not very hypey, and because, you know, he threw a crap ton of innings last year, including the playoffs. What was it, like 240-ish?
I think 243 is what I added up. Okay, well, I've actually pulled it up on Fang. Yeah, 243. Yeah. That's a ton of innings.
Yeah. And he's obviously he's been great for so many years. He's a true master of his craft. And, you know, career number wise, incredible, man. A 3.20 ERA, a 1.11 whip, 27% strikeout rate. He's fantastic. I don't know why. I haven't been clicking on him. I think part of it has to do with like where he's going, because right now he's got an ADP of like 38, 40. And there are just guys in the next tier that I like just as much, if not more. And it's not a slight against Gallen as much as it is just guys I'm comfortable with a little bit more in that next range. One of those guys is Freddy Peralta, by the way. I think it's been very, you know, much stated that incredible league best K to walk ratio last season, K to walk percentage. He was phenomenal. Maybe there's some concerns with people that the team may not produce crazily, but I don't know. The team isn't that bad. It's not a reason for me to not draft a potentially, you know, a healthy Freddy Peralta. Didn't even play a full season last year and had, you know, basically had like 200 plus strikeouts. Any issues with him?
No. It's second half. If he's that guy, I mean, I have him almost a 13 K per nine in the second half. 31% K minus walk, 2.7 Sierra. Again, it's such a small sample size in a half a season, but the guy looked like he figured it out. The other thing I really like about Peralta, he used to be a two-pitch pitcher, and he's now legitimately throwing four pitches. Mm-hmm. So I think he's over 10% on all of his pitches. So he was a fastball slider guy. Now he's throwing a curveball and a changeup, and he upped his changeup percentage almost 18% from 12% from the first half to second half. So that really kind of propelled him, it seems like.
And I misspoke earlier when I spoke about Freddy Peralta's K walks ratio. I just meant the, like you said, the K minus walk percentage, and 30.6%. That was the league best. The strikeout rate in the second half, 36%. Nobody was better. Pivetta was up there, of course. And, you know, I'm looking at cool stuff like I did the last couple of years, but even more so now, like looking at individual pitches. And what these guys have, and just looking at, like, you know, the run value stat, just nice and simple, but just his four seamer being, you know, ridiculously well above average, a plus 12 run value. That was one of the best pitches in baseball last year. And like you mentioned, those other offerings he's got, the changeup, the slider, the curve, it's all good. So lots to like about him. All right, let's talk about Tariq the Freak in the Roto Sheets Scooball.
Is there anything worse than your fantasy darling throwing 100 in spring training? That's a little concerning, but man, does he look good. If he can stay healthy, I have a hard time believing personally that arm's going to make more than 27, 28 starts on a team that's not going to win a ton of games. But if you're looking for strikeouts and some good ratios, he's your guy. A lot's been made about his easy schedule to end last year, but he had a lot of pedigree, came back from an injury and just shoved it. So he is elite.
Yeah. For the, like, maybe, you know, 3% of listeners who watch The Bachelor, it kind of feels like that. Like they're, you know, they're like in their group date. This is me. I'm not watching the show anymore. Just kind of in the background, but like, there's like, you know, the girls that they go on there at the group date with the one guy, but then, you know, they have to see the other person, you know, they seem like making out with the, you know, with the guy, whatever, but they think it's his guy. That's like Scooball. He's like everybody's, you know, like roto crush. And that's just in this round, because in a few rounds we'll talk about, or even next round group, we'll talk about Cole Reagan's another, but there's
you
a lot of these guys.
Completely lost me, Vlad.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah. You know, just like some, you know, when five people are dating one person, you know, that's kind of where I'm going with it. So,
oh, the whole online dating scene.
Yeah. Well, we may or may not edit that part out. We'll see. what about the sort of, again, the Sabs, Safe and Boring. You got Framber Valdez, you got Logan Webb. Aaron Nola probably is not safe and boring. He's like the every other year. It's obviously not a trend that is, it's the least sticky thing you could ever do. If there's somebody out there, by the way, if they are advising you to play, to draft Aaron Nola because it's an odd year and his ERA, no, it's an even year, that his ERA is good in every even year, run. Unfollow that person. I don't even know if they exist, but that's not a thing. yeah, let's talk about that group. Valdez, Webb, Nola. Let's throw Grayson in there.
And you can throw Max Fried in there as well.
I was trying not to. I was trying to.
You got a good group in there. A lot of safe. I mean, it feels good to have these guys as a two, maybe even a one. Nola, I can't figure out. You look under the hood, and it's actually not bad. There's a lot of green on my spreadsheet from his metrics, but. Man, I have never seen a pitcher have a 5-run lead more often and then just give it up. And luckily, I didn't own him. If I owned him, I would just been going crazy last year. But it seemed like every time he had a big lead, he just end up not finishing 5 innings and give it up. So is he the guy with a 3.3 ERA or is he a guy with the 4.5 ERA? And I have no idea, to be honest. I know I'm supposed to give some good advice, but I don't know.
You just got to be honest. That's even better.
Yeah, Logan Webb, Max Fried seem very similar guys. I think you're going to get more innings from Webb, more strikeouts from Fried. Matt Chapman in San Francisco should help Webb even more, who's a heavy ground ball pitcher. I always hesitate pitching to contact because there's so much luck about where the balls hit. But, I mean, Logan Webb led the league in innings last year. Not the highest strikeout rate, but the guy just was so good across the board. And Max Fried looked like he was going out on a mini breakout before getting injured, but shoulder injuries are scary, right?
Yeah. And again, let's pound the table with it and let's make strikeouts, you know, fancy strikeouts and the, you know, the 30% strikeout guy. Let's normalize it you don't need it. I really believe that. I really feel like there are a lot of guys later in the draft, your Rodones, Sales, there are just guys available that you can make up for. If you are, you know, taking you're waiting and then you take, you know, a Fried and a Webb. At first glance, you look at your roster and you're like, oh man, I'm way behind in strikeouts here. But dude, you just laid it on the table. Like what's wrong with Logan Webb other than maybe, you know, he may not win, you know, he may not have the upside of like somebody in Atlanta or the Dodgers to win 17 plus games. That, you know, that part's tough, but like, you just told me, like, they added Matt Chapman, an already pretty decent defense, and in that park. And, I mean, there's a lot to love about Logan Webb, and he's just so secure. There's just nothing to worry about, really.
Yeah, I mean, he pitched in literally in front of the worst defense in the league last year. I think they led the league in errors and runs saved, and he was elite. So if you add Matt Chapman, Jung-Hoo Lee, and some other, you know, high quality infielders. They signed Nick Ahmed. I don't believe he's going to play every day, but that's another gold glove out there. It's much, much improved, much more athletic defense to help Webb and those heavy ground balls. And then Framber is basically another Logan Webb with the heavy ground ball tilt. Better team context. We're talking Framber Valdez, by the way. And he was interesting. He was really good until he got hurt. I think he had an ankle injury and came back and just was terrible all the way through the playoffs. And so I'd be really interested to kind of follow him in spring. How's he look? What's the velocity? What's the movement like? And see where he's sitting. Because I was in on him last year. I thought I'd be in more on him this year, but I like those other guys a little better at this moment.
Yeah, and then just the final guy. I'm not going to keep talking up Max Fried. It's just one of those things where the ratios, again, it's a very big thing to me. The team context is incredible. We know that he's a phenomenal talent. Again, little things like being one of only three pitchers with over the last two seasons that have an ERA under 2.50. I mean, come on here. Elite curveball, all of his other pitches are plus pitches. Again, it's really just, you just hoping he stays healthy. He stays healthy, you got yourself probably a top six pitcher, even without the massive strikeouts. Think of it like a, you know, like a Matt Olson or a Corey Seager on the hitter side that get you there, in, you know, top value without stolen bases, right? So that's kind of how I see it. I just thought of that.
Yeah, so, can he get the 30 starts? That's kind of the golden number for me with him. So if he can stay healthy, he's right there. I agree with you.
All right, the next batch of guys. It's Zach Eflin. It's still free agent Blake Snell, Logan Gilbert, Jesus Luzardo and Yuri Perez from Miami, Joe Ryan, Bobby Miller. That's kind of the group here. And then, I don't know, I was thinking like, kind of feels like maybe Nola and Grayson Rodriguez kind of belong a little bit more in this group. Like, I don't know what I even think of Grayson Rodriguez, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think he can be a top five pitcher this season. But then if I saw it, I also wouldn't be surprised. So I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the true correct valuation on a Grayson Rodriguez?
Grayson's interesting. I like pitchers that grind through tough issues. He seemed to start pouting a little bit last year when things went sideways. And so I really believe that is a narrative, but it's true. If you don't have that bulldog mentality, that guy's that's just going to get you out no matter what, and things have to be going perfect, I'm a little concerned. Grayson's arm is elite. And when he got sent down and came back up, he came back firing. He was a top 10 pitcher when he came back up. Can he do that over the whole year? Can he do that over a 32 start grind through the summer months through Baltimore? So I think he is closer to this tier. I think he's a little overpriced for what he is, but there is a significant upside there.
Who is the pitcher? That's who it was. Carlos Martinez on the Cardinals. I remember him so well. Mm-hmm. So incredibly talented, but the dude had no, he would just lose it. Like, if he was like off his game, it just affected everyone. You could just see it on the field and the way that he would, he just kind of like struggle through things and scuffle and then just like lose it. And that really is a thing. It's something that you kind of have to notice yourself as you're following the games and things like that. You're right. You want that, like, that Scherzer mentality, that Verlander, just those like absolute, horses. So yeah, I know what you're saying there.
Yeah. I agree with you that Nola and Grayson should be probably in tier four. And then you have Cole Reagans. I won't use the word helium too much, cause I think Matty Mo started a drinking game with how often we were saying it. But this is kind of the season of, the word helium of guys rising. FTN does not condone drinking games, by the way. Just a little disclaimer, but how many innings will Reagans get in your opinion? Cause he looks electric, but I don't know how to project him properly.
Reagans, we have for 170s, decent ratios, nearly 200 strikeouts. I think, yeah, that's about where we have him. And man, but the price is rising quickly. And if he continues to have good outings in the spring, being on the Royals, be damned, that's not going to be a thing. People aren't going to care about the fact that the guy kind of has a bit of a high walk rate and walk issues, even going back to the minor leagues, even though he's a former first-round real-life pick and top prospect and all. And the fact that a lot of his great numbers last season were padded by insanely cake matchups, like the worst of the worst teams. And that's not to, it's not to take anything away from Reagans. I mean, he is a guy that's going to have some double-digit strikeout games this year again. But I also think he's going to have some of those disaster starts. And I think people can, fantasy managers were fickle. We can turn on you real quick, and all of a sudden your March darling becomes your April terror.
Yeah. He's a big question mark. He's only got a half a season of really good production. And I can't get that start out of my head where he had three straight wild pitches in Toronto. He looked like Rick Ankiel, just throwing the ball to the backstop. But he seemed to figure it out pretty quick. So,
yeah. And so, like, if when he was going around 100, 110, and he was going in the Justin Steele range, like, yeah, sure, I'll take a little bit of a, little taste of upside. But now, 15 teamers, it's the fifth round. That's a very high draft capital. That is your SP2 for the most part. For some people, it might be SP1. That could be a little dangerous. So something I'd be careful with. And then if, like, you add, you want to go all the, like, kind of hype rebound guys like Sale and Bieber and Rodon, you just start loading up on a team like that, you're going to, chances of that just going swimmingly across the board is going to be very difficult. So something to keep in mind. Other guys in that range, that anyone specifically that stands out to you that is a massive target or massive fade?
I really like the group of arms and Logan Gilbert, Jesus Luzardo, Zach Eflin, Bobby Miller, Yuri Perez, and Joe Musgrove. I really do like them. I don't know how to decipher who's going to be the best of that group. I didn't realize how good Zach Eflin was last year until I dove in the offseason. I was an Eflin guy up until last year, and for some reason I got off him, and man, did I pay the price. He was dominant in Tampa, his first year in Tampa Bay. But it seems like Bobby Miller and Yuri Perez are the next big things. It's just, are they ready to do it now? Lizardo kind of did it last year. Can he repeat it? He ran out of gas at the end of the last year. Logan Gilbert's been a guy that seems just extremely safe and just kind of a bulldog on the group, on the mound. Not a guy that I've really been interested in the past, but he's kind of, I'm coming around on him. So I do like all those arms. Is there anybody that stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, Eflin stands out big time. Not only does he have pretty high valuation, he really does pop up. And this is a guy that's basically, you know, you're projecting maybe a tick below a strikeout per nine. I mean, that's kind of where he was last year. I don't think he's not in your massive 30% plus strikeout rate group. But the key marker there is the control. And of course, the ballpark, half his games there, it helps in Tampa. But that to me is epic. He's always been a good control guy. He's had injury history in Philadelphia. It all just kind of came together for him in Tampa. And I mean, like, what was like a 4%-ish walk rate, second or third best in the league among qualified. I mean, that's something I caught on to a little bit late last year. It was just like a theme among all those like top pitchers, the ones that were truly valuable, the ones that we all significantly profited on, were the guys that had really pinpoint control, low whips, low walk rates. I'm okay sacrificing some strikeouts to be able to get guys like that. So I think as long as he stays healthy, I think he's a great value, and I actually like him. I think I trust him a little bit more, I think, than the other guys in this group. Yeah, guy I really want to trust, by the way, is Joe Ryan. I really want to trust him because I think he can be an elite starter, but I don't know. How do you feel?
Ryan, I've really liked. I just looking at all the numbers, his ball percentage was at 31.1. His control is elite. Really good fastball. He's working on the secondary stuff. His second half was terrible, though. I think he had a 6 ERA in the second half with a 4.5 ERA for the year. But all of the metrics, the O-swing, the Z-contact, the contact, the swinging strike are all really good. I'm interested. I just haven't found myself clicking on him because the price is a 2. It's hard to really feel like you're comfortable going in with Joe Ryan as a 2. And I don't know what it is other than maybe the 4.5 ERA last year.
Yeah, it's hard to like kind of get it out of your head. But you think back this time last season. So we actually didn't even talk about his teammate, Pablo Lopez, who, again, I mean, he's another darling. Like anybody that gets a little bit of extra love, like in the fantasy community, like, for example, what Nick Pollock is doing with Pitcher List, I think is phenomenal. So Nick goes, obviously, kind of a master of understanding pitchers, even to like, you know, an Al Einstein degree that I can't even begin to fathom. And then he gives us a chance to kind of get into their heads. He sits there, you know, they sit there and they analyze starts on TV with like Pablo Lopez. That's cool. But also what that does is it inflates a little bit of our sort of like comfort level with them and our trust. And it's kind of like, oh, well, hey, Pablo Lopez, we forgot the guy that was always injured, you know, a couple of years ago that was, you know, struggled. Look, he's completely changed himself. Look, the last two seasons, consistent 30 plus starts, great whip, great strikeouts, all that. And we forget that there was a time when Joe Ryan was the better prospect. He was the top dog. And now we look at that 4.5 ERA from Ryan last year, some struggles. We know, you know, look back and think, look at his game logs. And even if you remember them, like the first couple of months, like, the dude was insane. He was unhittable and got hurt and just, you know, things fell apart. So I don't think those two guys are that far off. I think they're pretty close. And it's one of the reasons I haven't been clicking too hard on Pablo Lopez is just because really just like a puzzle game. It's because those next tiers of pitchers to me seem a little kind of more similar. So I don't want to pay the safety like a late second, early third for a Pablo, but hey, who knows? I could be wrong.
Yeah. What price, what discount would you need to get on Blake Snell at this point to be interested in him with him still not signing?
The problem is he's in that range of guys, you know, Eflin, Bobby Miller, Ryan. And he's, I guess he's starting to fall a little bit. So now he'll be like going, you know, pick 90 is like, you know, he can get around there and that's like the end of the sixth. I guess it depends on who my first starting pitcher is or like kind of what my build is at that point, because I'm not too worried about him overall. I'm not worried about his landing spot. I think it's just like a little bit of like ERA bounce back. Like there's no way he's going to be under 3 again this year, like kind of like no matter where he lands, and you already know he's going to have a high whip. So or at least for the price and in comparison to other guys in that range. So, you know, what are you really paying for? You're playing for a little uncertainty of where he's going to land, how that's going to go. And for like basically, you know, a top five overall strikeouts guy. So I don't know, maybe like sixth, seventh round.
Yeah. So you're talking basically into the next tier, which I think is pretty accurate. It just feels like a recipe for disaster coming off a Cy Young year. You don't get to say last time he got the Cy Young very often with free agent pitchers.
Yeah.
But he came off his Cy Young year last time and he was not very good. It just feels like something bad's going to happen. He's either going to sign a short-term prove-it contract coming off a Cy Young, which doesn't make sense, or somehow get a big contract without many teams bidding. But he's going to be trying to prove something coming in on a short off-season training camp, going to have to ramp up. Everything seems thrown off. So I think it's going to be ugly for Snell this year.
Well, what about these rumors about the Dodgers possibly poaching him? Well, you'd be so mad, wouldn't you?
No, take him. You know, you can do deferred till, you know, 3022 or wherever the Dodgers are doing at this point. Why not, right?
But man, yeah, that would that'd kill all the Gavin Stone buzz, that's for sure. All right, Joe Musgrove, real quick on him. I get some random comments sometimes, like whenever I say, you know, how much I like Musgrove, like, but he's never healthy. He's just a guy. No, he's not just a guy. He's been elite when he pitches. He is one of the only guys averaging over, actually, since 2021, he's averaging over 150 innings per season. And the only guys with lower earned run averages in those, like, kind of that innings range is Scherzer and Burns. I know I speak about earned run averages like, you know, people are like, oh, but what was his xFIP and what of his Sierra and this and that? Yes, these are all important. When we talk about these things, we'll point them out here and there. But those were the results. That's what you're getting from Joe Musgrove every year. And even if he's like outperforming his peripherals one year, oh, wait, he did it again the next year. Oh my God, next year, there's something to that. And part of that also is he is another good control guy. He used to be wild. Remember him in the Pittsburgh days a little bit. He wasn't all that great. And then that COVID season. But since he's come to San Diego, he's just continuously reduced his walk rate. And he's now in the like 5% range, which is, you know, well above average. So I think as long as he's healthy, he's fine. And the other thing is, if, you know, I want to pay close attention to spring training. It's like now he's had a couple of like not great outings, but do we know, is he tinkering with stuff? Is he trying things out and then just goes bonkers once the season starts? But that's something else I think kind of want to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I'd love to see him on the mound coming off kind of the injury season last year. Has he gotten an out yet in spring training? Last time I checked, he...
Don't matter. But, okay, good.
You know, there's some players that just outproduce their metrics, and it's a skill. I mean, you look back at Tim Anderson for all those years. How did he hit over 300? He just did it. Obviously, it's not the best example because last year he didn't, but the metrics are still metrics. They're not what's on the back of the baseball card, like you said. And Musgrove is a really good pitcher. He doesn't throw his fastball very much. He throws all of his pitches at any time, which just keeps hitters off balance. The crazy part for me with him, he just never seems to get above 10 wins. I don't know what it is about the win total, and it's such a fluky number, but you can't really write him in for more than 10 wins. But I am interested in him at the price at the moment.
Yeah, and the wins part is, I mean, it's so unpredictable, right? Because we've seen that before where a guy just continuously has that bad luck with the wins and everything, and then just one year it just pops, it just hits. And I mean, we've seen some pitchers on bad teams, like they're winning 50%, 60% of their starts, and they're just, you know, just getting there somehow. There are always those outliers. But I mean, previous to last season and his injury, I mean, he only pitched half the season. Previous to that, in his two other years in San Diego, he pitched 181 innings on the dot. He made 30 starts and 31 starts, an ERA around 3, a walk rate around 6%, a whip exactly at 1.8 over those last two seasons. That was 2022 and 2021. He's really good, man. So I like Joe Musgrove. Let's talk about the next tier. So we already passed Reagan's. He's already, you know, soaring up into the next group. You got Justin Steele. Just real quick on him. How do I put this? Sorry, I didn't know your game, man. damn, I blew that. You know, the Shaq quote.
Yeah.
I wasn't familiar with your game. He is, man, he was been really good the last couple of seasons. And he's just, I mean, he was in the MVP race running. He's a legit stud. And he, I feel like he's getting slept on a little bit.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but I was listening to a podcast with Sarah Sanchez on it, and she's the Cubs expert, and he made some sort of change to delivery or pitch mix or something middle of two seasons ago, and he has just been elite ever since. You usually don't see a guy throwing 92 miles an hour with only two pitches being elite, but everything across the board, he was just dominant, and he feels safe somehow for a guy with two pitches, and it's usually a no-no for me. I got to kind of dig into him a little more. But yeah, he is being slept on. He is falling down draft boards, probably over a round past ADP in the last couple of weeks in the drafts I've been in, unlike the other guy that we're going to talk about in a second.
Yeah, that's a good shout-out there, by the way, Sarah Sanchez and Shelley Verigstraat. They are going to be rocking a fab podcast, which we definitely do not have enough of during the season. So I'm going to come on their show as a guest. So that'll be fun. But Sarah's somebody that I respect very much in the fantasy industry, and specifically on her intel on the Cubs. And she's getting to go to the games a lot and watching. And so, you know, nice shout out there. But did I just shout out myself for a nice shout out? Did I just say nice shout out about
congratulations.
Myself? Yeah, it's getting late. It's getting really late. All right, Justin Steele. Is there anything specific that we like about him?
I can't pinpoint anything specifically. Like I said, I got to dive a little deeper on Steele.
He 2 years in a row of elite ratios, essentially. The team is good. They're going to definitely give him some win, back him up and provide him some opportunity to win some games. So he's a stud. Chris Sale, Helium. How long does that guy hold up? And also, why are we, and maybe I'm just reading it wrong, but like, why is Tristan McKenzie getting crap for, you know, his body not being able to hold up for a season yet? Or are people saying the same thing about Sale because they're both really skinny?
Yeah, I think that's the only concern about Sale is the innings. He came back last year. I think he's, 35, 36 now, and he actually was pretty good last year. He's never had a K rate below 10 per 9. He just... going to that Braves team, it's a lot of fun. I just, how high is he going to go ADP wise? I mean, we're talking now closer to pick 100 than 150. I really enjoyed when he was sitting around 150, but is he going to pitch more than 140 innings? I personally don't think so. Those 140 might be fun, but he might go punch a wall or something and break his hand. He's a little bit of a loose cannon, but.
Yes, except for, are you really punching walls when you're up 13, you know? And coming out clean five innings. So I don't know.
Yeah.
May not be a lot to punch.
Yeah. He's still going up. I'll be interested to see where his ADP settles up.
I wanted to look at his ADP in online championships, the 12 team format. And so over the last week, it's reasonable. I mean, it's gone up for sure, but it's an ADP of 102 right next to Musgrove. And they both have mins like in the mid 80s. So that's about, I still think he gets up to like maybe 80, 90 if he continues to look good there.
Yeah, safe to say.
Nobody wants to touch Dylan Cease, it seems. Kind of a forgotten guy. You got Tanner Bibee with a lot of people concerned that when you look at rejection systems and just like and his expected metrics last season just as far as CRA and XFIP and things like that, XCRA, it appear that the dude was a little bit lucky. He definitely ran hot last season as a rookie, but Tanner Bibee ran hot all year, man. Like he was just like incredible last season, at least from what I remember.
Yeah, he was our big fab pickup. I think we spent $400 on one league that we lost. I think we might have lost Sale in that league. Ironic, but he is just. I think I'm gonna have to see it one more year with him. I do like the arm. I don't like the control as much. The ball rate was over 36%. Like you said, the metrics were over 4.22 for FIP and 4.19 for Sierra. I like other arms in this area. One guy that I am interested in is kind of what is Sonny Gray? What happens to him? He was going kind of a little late before the injury. Does he fall two or three rounds with the hamstring tightness? I don't mind leg issues with pitchers, a lot better than arm issues, obviously. Do you buy the dip, depending where he settles with Sonny Gray there?
I don't want to take a pitcher off the bat that's on the injured list, because I've kind of been, I've rode that horse before, and the horses, you know, dumped me right into manure. Mm-hmm. And I did it with, in my main event, and I think I probably told the story a couple of pods ago, but it was, I was coming in with a plan of like really not touching those guys. And I don't know, it was just caught up in the moment. And before I knew it, I ended up with Rodone and Musgrove on my, within my first seven picks. I think I got them in like the sixth and seventh on my main event team. And they were my 3 and 4 or my 2 and 3. But either way, I had two guys start the year. And then I just had to get Brandon Pfaadt later. So there you go. Three starting pitchers on your bench to start the season. Not good. And so you look at your team and you like, what is that word? Roster or whatever. Roster bait, and be excited about what your team looks like middle of the season. Oh my God, look at this rotation. It's incredible. Well, that never happens. It just finds a way to not work out. So long story short is less worried about Sonny Gray because, it isn't an arm thing and still St. Louis, and maybe he just falls to where he needs to go. So maybe it'll be like, now from the 120s to like, eighth round to the like 150s, 160s, 170s, 10th, 11th, 12th. It's a little bit more palatable.
I agree. A couple other guys, you mentioned Dylan Cease. I haven't found a roster construction where I can roster him. I have no idea how to project him. I mean, talk about bipolar. The last 2 years could not have been as different other than the strikeout numbers, but I just don't think he has control to kind of continue to be considered elite. But seems like the White Sox want to trade him, but they're asking too much. So I think he needs to get out of there to be worth anything. So I don't really know what to do with him.
Yeah, I haven't been drafting him. Again, another one of those, like you said, it's hard to know where the ratios are going to land. And we all as a group, as a community, as an industry, we projected that pretty good last year, but it was obvious. Like when a dude that walks 10% and has like a sub-3 ERA, of course things are not going to, go so swimmingly. And that's exactly what happened last year with the ERA, more in the 4 range, right? That kind of makes sense. Even if he's like a 3.5 to 4 ERA guy, the walk rate is still a bit of an issue. The run support is going to be an issue. Like, how complacent is this team going to be if they're just continually getting, their asses beat, basically? So I don't know. He really does kind of need a trade. And then, like, how motivated are you to pitch for a team, like that? Like, you might see the Tim Anderson thing from last year. Maybe Luis Robert starts dogging it a little bit. Eloy Jimenez all of a sudden has hurt his pinky or something cutting fish. I don't know.
Eloy got hurt again.
Oh man. You know what? It's so funny. I really got to watch what I tweet. I tweeted something like, I'm just messing around. I see Eloy Jimenez, I was just sorting by like MLB preseason leaders, and I see, oh, Eloy Jimenez has more hits than anybody. And I was like, I typed, oh, Eloy Jimenez has more hits than anyone in 2024. And it sounds like I'm making a prediction. And so I got everybody in my mentions like, dude, you're crazy. Dude, Eloy's always hurt. I'm like, no. Literally, screenshot. Here, Eloy Jimenez has the most hits right now. Anyways, just a little stupid side bar. That's not what people are here for. They want to hear about Bailey Ober. Bailey Ober, Helium City.
6'10" of skyrocketing value. He is... he's flying up. I think he's going around with Chris Sale right now. I think he went ahead of him, which he looks really good in spring training. I think we might look back and think spring training's been a little overvalued. But he was a guy I had kind of circled in the round, in the pick 140 to 160 area. I'm having a harder time in the pick 100 area to really get excited about him.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that also has been outperforming his xFIP over the last 2 years. He's made nearly 40 starts, by nearly a full run. Wherever that lands, it doesn't matter. He's one of those control guys. Walk rate, probably going to end up somewhere between 5 and 6%. Good offense, tons of run support, you know, good vibes in Minnesota this year. So there's, you know, there's a lot to like there. It's a really nice rotation. I feel like getting any piece of that rotation is really nice. And then again, his changeup is excellent. Very, very, very good pitch there. Michael King, before we leave this tier, does he even belong in this tier? Should he be in the one below that?
I called him this year's mystery man. He was really good as a reliever. He was really good as a starter. Can he throw 160 to 170 innings? And what does that K rate look like for a full season as a starter when you're not letting it loose? He is another guy that I'm interested in. I really don't know how to value. It's really hard to take that kind of arm as your number three and kind of be stable. So I've been passing on him, but I might regret that.
Yeah, I think I'm biased a little bit. He's very helpful for me. Like I read the room on him, I guess, so to speak, early on, where like, okay, this is turning into something. This isn't just the Yankees really want him to, you know, they're stretching him out. It's no longer just, you know, a couple innings here or there. He's no longer a reliever. They're legit making him a starter. And it was insane. Like, you know, elite, like 30, 32% strikeout rate. I don't think anyone expects that from a full season, you know, full adjustment here, but he used to be a starter. He was a starter in, you know, in his younger days. I don't mean little league. I mean like, you know, high school, college, like early in minors. And he's pretty solid. So I do like Michael King. I'm going to go on a whim and people are going to tear me to shreds on this one. Thankfully it's not a tweet, so they can't screenshot it, but I'm going to say that he actually out earns Cole Reagans in fantasy value this year.
Wow, that is a bold prediction, and I am here for it. I like it, Vlad.
All right, the next group is some kind of steady, stable guys, a nice mix of some young upside, but we've got free agent Jordan Montgomery. We've got older gentlemen, at least in baseball years, guys like Merrill Kelly, elder statesman Justin Verlander. You've got veteran Jose Berríos. Nick Pivetta's in the mix. You got, who is this Christian Javier? Are you 2022 Javier, 2023? We don't know. And then Shane Bieber wanted to bring these guys up and see who stands out to you.
Biebs. I big Bieber fan this year. There was this crazy stat out there, depending on his mile per hour, if it's below 92, he's very hittable. If it's above 92, he's extremely filthy. I think if he's healthy and you're not asking him to be the ace of your staff, he could be really good for you here. But again, that comes down to health because he had some shoulder issues last year too. A couple other guys that are interested in Hunter Brown, doesn't look good just if you glance at it because over the 5 ERA, but he was actually pretty good last year. He wore down the second half, got a great team context in Houston. Nick Pivetta just went nuts, you know, adding that sweeper the end of last year. Shota Imanaga, he was supposed to have better stuff plus than Yamamoto, which is interesting. Cubs defense, like we talked about earlier, could be good for him. And then another one that's kind of undervalued, in my opinion, Mitch Keller. Very few guys you're going to have for 200 strikeouts a slate. He did not have a high walk rate, but he had over a 1-2 whip. I think he was only one of five guys that kind of, it was a little unlucky to see his whip that high, and the Pirates might be better, might not. So, but I think as a late four, he could actually pay that off a little bit.
Yeah, Mitch Keller's, I mean, he threw more innings than just about any other pitcher in baseball, and he was pretty close to 200. And then he's just, you know, continuing to make improvements. He's gone, even in our just general assessment of somebody that was just in, you know, an absolute untrustable hot mess to now like a you know, reliable guy, like somebody we're drafting on a bad team because he racks up the innings, you know, gets some strikeouts. Like he's pretty solid. So even a guy that underperformed with his ratios, he actually had a 4.2 ERA, and the whip in Sierra was about a half run lower than that. So that's you know, something to keep in mind there. So I do like him very much. Sinker is elite. Added the sweeper last year. I do like Hunter Brown a lot as well. I think he's always, you know, usually a good rule of thumb is When in doubt, draft a Houston pitcher. And he's one guy who I think could surpass the 200 strikeout mark. So I'm up on him. Imanaga, don't know much, you know, more than what we'll see in camp and what we've, you know, seen clips wise and things from, you know, his years overseas, but it looks pretty good. I think there will be some issues like a lot of pitchers will have in Wrigley in the hot summers. They'll have some bad starts. We'll just have to time those and, you know, play those properly. So yeah, I think this is a great range. A lot of good guys to shop with. And then, you know, the guy I didn't mention is Carlos Rodon. I do want to get your take on him.
Yeah, Rodon's interesting. I have been drafting him. He was a guy going firmly in the second round, if not close to the 1-2 turn last year before the injury. I don't believe the skills have really declined that much. So you're betting on a healthy bounce back. He's been pitching in spring. Again, effectiveness doesn't really matter as long as he's on the mound throwing 95, 96. I am a little partial to him as a Giants fan. He was so good for us. And I got to watch his, like, every one of his starts, and he was dominant. And if it's still in there, getting him where he's going feels like it makes a lot of sense, but there's a lot of risk that comes involved with that.
Yeah, there's a type we might have, and there really is something interesting in the guys in this range who we've seen do it before. We've seen Cy Young winners. We've seen SP1, you know, SP1, SP2, SP3 overall from guys in this range. They're just a little older now. Shane Bieber, Carlos Rodon, Chris Sale. I think the key there is pick your spots. I don't think you can build a team around all these guys, because I think it's destined for issues. It's just, you know, too much wishful thinking that just it magically happens for everybody, you know, and Giancarlo Stanton play 160 games. Like, you know, some things just aren't happening, but, you know, pick your spots. If Rodon's that guy, you know, get in on him. But between Rodon, Verlander, Sale, and Bieber, is there a guy you're most likely to invest in, like, just regardless of price at the main event?
With that group of four, it's Sale and Rodon. Verlander at 41 years old with a shoulder injury, I have zero interest in. And Bieber is in a clear tier below them. So it kind of all depends how the price settles in. I think Bieber will be the cheapest out of them, but it would probably be Sale or Rodon.
All right, let's fly through. Before we get into guys that go past round 200, let's talk about, let's drink helium. Bryce Miller and then Brian Wu, not really getting as much helium as Miller, because Miller is showing off his grips and stuff, and, you know, kind of, you know, fun, flamboyant dude, you know, doing clips with Rob Friedman, pitching ninja. So what do you think of these guys? Bryce Miller, we're getting loopy here.
I think Bryce Miller might skip tier six when he gets up to tier five. He is everybody's darling right now. I like him. He's got a really elite fastball. If he can make that splitter work or a secondary pitch, he could be good. But it was the fastball or nothing last year. Usually guys with good fastballs I'm attracted to, because it's easier to create a secondary pitch. It's really hard to create a good fastball. It depends, again, where his ADP settles. I don't feel comfortable spending a 150 pick, but I was really liking where he was around 180. I thought that was a really good price for him. Wu, his splits against lefties, it just kind of kept me off it. Another guy with a good fastball, kind of seems like a theme in Seattle, huh?
Yeah.
But I really don't have much interest in Wu this year.
Yeah, we're just getting to the point where guys like that, they're the good days, the good prices have passed them by. I think it's one of the advantages to drafting early. And it's fun, of course. It's fun to draft early. I mean, listen, we can't all do it. But if you are really into fantasy baseball, this is what you love to do. You got to get your guys before these prices change and things move like this. Like, you know, going back and looking at teams in December and January, and it's just like it's night and day on a lot of these guys. So it's always fun to see when you have shares when they were 200 cheaper. So it's always nice. Braxton Garrett's like way out of this range now. Just real quick on that in general. Maybe we can just turn real quick to that rotation. So we already discussed Lizardo and Yuri. dude, Braxton Garrett's hurt and will be ready. He should be fine. Maybe, you know, a quick IL stint begin the season. That's going to obviously affect his price. He'll probably go in somewhere in the 200s now, mid 200s. And then you've got, who else? Trevor Rogers is not at full strength. And there's and then there's Edward Cabrera. So he's a darling of the spring right now, like no walks, which is really not his style, which is nice to see if you like ECAB. And then AJ Puck is the man too right now. Do you like either of those guys? You think they hold up? Are you investing in Miami arms?
Former Oakland A great AJ Puck. He's interesting with his strikeout upside pitching there. Another guy I like later to take a shot on is Max Meyer, former first round pick that's coming off Tommy John surgery. And I think there might be an opportunity, depending how far Braxton Garrett falls, to take a shot on him if he's ramping back up and he's getting healthy. Because I really liked that arm last year. He was another fab pickup that just I identified early. And he was just like an every week starter. I think he had that one start against the Braves where the manager left him in to give up like 12 earned runs or something. Mm-hmm. And he still ended up with like a 3.5 ERA for the year. It was amazing how good he was the rest of the year. It's a fun rotation, but not a very good team. So it's kind of give and take with that, but a lot of upside in there. Edward Cabrera, if he can throw strikes, I mean, could turn in to a top five round pitcher with the strikeout upside. So Yuri, I'm in on Lizardo. I'm in on, and then I would say Puck and Meyer mainly, I would say I'd be in on.
Yeah. I'm still not fully buying the Edward Cabrera thing. I mean, he's still cheap enough that maybe you can take a flyer, but I do think it's some whip risk later in the draft. Max Meyer has been a favorite of mine past round 30 for a while. And then he just crept up into a range where became a little unsustainable. Like, you know, can't be drafting him around like, you know, 380 overall when you were getting him at 500. I mean, you could, but it's, you know, just for a guy that's not going to be starting there, it doesn't make much sense. Other guys in this range, we touched on Reed Detmers there. I think that with the new sort of regime there, I don't think the Angels could be any worse as a staff or managed as a pitching staff as badly as they were last year. I think there's some nice bounce back in these arms here, and they're all for the most part pretty affordable. You know, with Canning and Silseth, Chase Silseth, if he's able to show some endurance and make it past, you know, 4 or 5 innings, I think he's got some upside. But I do really think Reed Detmers is the ace of the staff. By the way, they're going to be testing out, they're trying to stretch out Jose Soriano because their bullpen just got so deep so quickly. They added Robert Stevenson. Granted, he may start on the IL opening day, or most likely will be. And then they got Matt Moore, the veteran lefty. So yeah, Soriano even moving to rotation possibly.
Yeah, that's a lot of interesting arms in Los Angeles. Detmers, another guy that just went crazy as far as his draft value last year when he was throwing 96 to 98 in spring training. I think he ended up going around the 9th or 10th round. And I think his ADP going into the big drafts was like 15 or 16. So he was a guy that really jumped up. I think out of the Angels, I'm most interested in Canning, but kind of we'll wait and see. Silseth, another guy that's interesting for me. A couple other guys in that range for me, Brandon Pfaadt. He got sent down to the minors and made a pretty significant change to his setup on which side of the rubber he was pitching on. And he came back up, pitched really well, and then got in the playoffs and pitched even better. I actually thought the playoff tax would have been a little more on his ADP this year, but he's kind of settled into rounds 13, 14. And then another guy, you mentioned him earlier, Tristan McKenzie. I really thought that I would have been in at the discount this year, and I was. But have you heard any news on him? Like, I'm getting a little worried that I haven't heard anything about him throwing yet.
Not even throwing?
He's throwing, obviously. I haven't heard that he's not throwing, but I haven't seen him pitch once. I haven't heard any update. I haven't seen or heard anything. It's kind of been radio silence on him.
That's a good question. That's something for us to look into. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. What about old man Charlie Morton? Had a pretty horrific run last season, where he just wasn't the same old guy that we were able to trust. Anyone that you're interested in around him or his range?
Morton and his 1.4 ERA or whip, no thanks.
Yeah.
He's kind of off my board. You know, somebody's going to move up into that tier with Giolito being out for the year now. Who is it? Is it one of the Red Sox guys and Tanner Houck or Garrett Whitlock? Is it one of, you know, some other, who's going to be the riser that moves up into that? Because somebody needs to be replaced there. Where are you at with Walker Buehler? Are you taking him at all? Are you stashing him? He's healthy. No. He just isn't pitching yet.
No. And that could be a mistake because there's always some stash that I'm interested in. And I don't know. I don't know what's happened to me over the last couple months, but like he's way below his draft spot in VDP rankings. You know, I think I don't know when he's going to come up. I don't know how long I can wait. And I feel like those seven bench spots are so valuable. I'm already going to get hit with an injury. There's, you know, there's going to be one stash I take at least. And I don't know. I don't know if I can do it. Cause like, what if I take one of the rookies and they start off in the minors, right? Like something happens and like Jackson Holiday, you know, I want to grab him. And then all of a sudden, oh, I had Tristan McKenzie. Oh wait, he's not pitching either now. Or, oh, I got to take Sonny Gray. He's available at pick 200. All of a sudden I have three stashes. I got to pick my spots and maybe it's a mistake, but I can't do it on Buehler.
Yeah. I think I'm there with you. There's some really interesting arms in this area with Christopher Sanchez, Cutter Crawford, Nestor Cortez, and Luis Severino. All have a lot of fun upside, all have some interesting numbers, but they all have come with their own risk. Sanchez, there's a severe innings cap, it feels like, and Philadelphia keeps threatening to sign another starter for some reason. Cutter Crawford, he was just maddening to own with Alex Cora pulling him with the lead with in the fifth inning with two outs, so he doesn't get the win. Nestor had one good year coming off an injury plague season. Fun to watch, but who is he? And then Severino, speaking of who is he? Man, was he bad.
Velocity's up.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a wish and a hope drafting him thinking he's going to be good because there was nothing in his underlying numbers that showed me that he was going to be good. But the upside is a two if he hits. So I think that's kind of why there's so much fun there.
Yeah, you mentioned Christopher Sanchez. He's like the I tweeted a few weeks ago about how like Bailey Ober's everybody's kind of sneaky guy. Kind of feels like Christopher Sanchez is. He's just slowly creeping up ADP, like where it just kind of even hit me for a loop. I was like used to grabbing Christopher Sanchez in a certain place. It was like maybe around 250, 270 ADP. I look, his ADP's 220. I'm like, what's going on here? Everybody's kind of creeping him up here a little bit. I think maybe more confidence that he is for now, for a while, that he's going to be locked into this rotation. The improvements that he made, the incredible season he had, great run support, good defense, good control, low walk rate. Seems like a lot of people like Christopher Sanchez.
A lot to like.
Speaking of things we may not like, Taj Bradley and Kyle Harrison. How do you feel about them? Because I want to like them, but I've got my, you know, my spidey sense or my gut sense with them. And I don't really know how I truly feel about them.
I'm surprised as a Giants fan with how much pedigree Harrison has had coming up that I'm not all in on him. I actually haven't drafted him once yet. Maybe it's the, you know, he's not worried about him going five innings with the control, but I really thought I'd be excited about it, but I just haven't really pulled the trigger. Taj is another guy. Great stuff. Has no idea where the fastball's going. If Tampa Bay can work their magic with him, because they desperately need him with all their injuries, he could be really value there.
Quick note from our sponsors before we close out with the, I guess, the last kind of 10 rounds of 15 team leagues. And this, of course, is the fact that MLB draft season is here, and the easiest place to play fantasy baseball is at Underdog Fantasy. We've been quite active in their best ball format fantasy drafts, where you can draft a 20-round team of hitters and pitchers, and the best score from the team you drafted becomes your score for each week of the MLB season. These drafts, man, they're constantly filling up each and every day. The dinger's getting close to full, and we're not even at opening day yet. And that dinger offers a cool $100,000 grand prize. It's only $10 to draft. By the way, that ends well before the regular season ends and before NFL season starts. So it's a really good opportunity to get a nice little payout, kind of grind out some of those entries there. And that tournament closes on opening day, March 28th. So jump in now, sign up for Underdog, use that promo code FTN and get your deposit match for up to $100. Again, promo code FTN and join Underdog and get drafting for the season today. End gamers, there's so many of them, got so many questions. These are guys that are really going to move the needle. We were just talking about Severino. Why not continue our conversation with the Mets and some maybe good things or bad things we don't like there? Quintana, you got your opening day starter, and then you got Baby Goat. Who's the Baby Goat for the people that don't know?
Tyler McGill. He got that nickname a couple of years ago when DeGrom was on the team, and his stuff looked like DeGrom on the mound. Drafted him everywhere that year, got an injury, came back throwing about 3 miles an hour less, and just has not been the same guy. But spring training's come along and he's looked pretty good. So I don't know if he's back or not. By the way, most of the Mets fans, just a little bit of them died when you said Jose Quintana opening day starter. That's a little rough. I think this is where the money's made though. The round, you know, pick 260 to 350, 260 to 400. If you can hit on some starters, I think this was where Bradish was going last year. And so if you can identify somebody that can turn into an every week pitcher, it could really pay off for the rest of your team. Guy I really like, DL Hall, going from Baltimore to Milwaukee. Milwaukee wants to give him a chance to start. Baltimore did not. Does he have the head for it? Because I know he has the arm for it. Another guy that's rising, Louis Varland. I have a hard time believing Anthony Discofani is going to keep him out of the number five spot. For that matter, Chris Paddock is probably not better than him. The sheriff, all I can think of is Matt Modica when I see see Paddock, because he had his profile picture of him in the cowboy hat forever. A couple other names I do like later. Mackenzie Gore has really kind of broke out in the first half and kind of fell off in the second half. And then, you know, can't quit Steven Matz. So what about some names for you?
Yeah, I like a lot of the guys you named. I've been drafting DL Hall, I mean, ever since he's come to Milwaukee. Just have a really good feeling about that staff, maybe with the exception of, like, not crazy about Wade Miley, even though even him has had a couple of good seasons, even in here in his late 30s. But I do kind of think this pitching staff's a bit sneaky. I do like DL Hall. I'd like to see him really stay healthy, stick in that rotation, show that good control, kind of live up to that big prospect hype, and maybe show that it wasn't a horrible, horrible trade, trading Corbin Burns away, but it had to happen. DL Hall is a nice piece back, so I am a fan there. The sheriff you mentioned, Chris Paddock, I don't know how I feel about him, meaning I don't think I'm going to go there. I feel like his ADP is a bit too high. I think he's going to be a bit erratic. I don't think he's going to be all the way back from that one kind of great season he had. Marcus Stroman, just, I don't know, just doesn't do it for me. Yankee Stadium, the low strikeout rate, getting older, not necessarily a huge fan. But I am kind of interested in guys like Frankie Montas. He's like the closest I've come to being interested in a Cincinnati Red for a while. I mean, as far as starting pitchers go, I'm interested in all the Cincinnati Reds hitters, but the pitchers usually is just like a full on, I'm just not interested. You know, like Hunter Green with all those strikeouts, like if he's going helium pick 100, even, you know, with the upside, I just can't do it because I think there are going to be some tough starts where it's not quite Herman Marquez-esque, meaning, you know, remember Herman Marquez used to draft him as like your, what is it, like SP4, and you almost felt obligated to start him. But then you only realized after you drafted, holy crap, I drafted a Rockies pitcher, and I have to start this Rockies pitcher. And that's kind of the issue with Great American. You're like, oh, Hunter Green, he's awesome, my number two. You know, just 12 strikeouts against the Pirates. Oh, wait, he's against the Dodgers at home. This is dangerous, and this is my SP2. So things like that I'm kind of trying to think about. All that to say, with Frankie Montas, for whatever reason, maybe it's the price and the fact that he's like 350 and the fact that he has always been really good when healthy. Believe maybe there's something there. And he's cheap enough, or at least has been cheap enough, to the point where you don't have to play him every week. You can stream him to a 3-4 ERA as opposed to, you know, getting bombed on certain spot, pick a spot. So I like things like that. And I'm also a little interested in James Paxton. Maybe it's just kind of the old me trying to make fetch happen along with Sale and Rodon and Bieber and all these guys. But like, the price is cheaper. And even if you just get, you know, 8 weeks out of him of like above average starts, I think I'm in on that. I can stream that too.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of good points. It's a couple other guys in the area. Casey Mize, former number one overall pick, throwing gas. Looks healthy coming back. You know, it's interesting. When he first came up, wasn't striking anybody out. You don't really see a number one pick not striking guys out. So is he healthy? Is he in the rotation? Cole Irvin adds 4 miles an hour. What the hell? Like, where does that come from? But man, he looks good, and he's going to be in the rotation the first month minimum with Bradish and the other injury they have. It's slipping my mind right now. Sorry, it's a little late. And then some other names. We talked about Silseth. You have Garrett Whitlock, Tanner Houck. One, if not both of them, will be in the rotation. Griffin Canning. We talked about Trevor Rogers kind of starting behind a little bit. I'm intrigued with Jordan Hicks on the Giants and that starting pitching experiment. If he can stay healthy, the strikeout upside's there and the defense behind him, like we talked about. Eric Fetty coming back from Japan. Is he any good? You know, he could pay off, but again, bad White Sox team. And a couple of fun flyers, Gavin Stone, Brady Singer, who was going in the top 12 rounds last year, and Jose Urquidy. Those are the kind of what I have. And I have one more question for you, Vlad. Is Michael Kopech reeling you back in this year?
Man, I must not be watching what he's doing. And maybe it's like on purpose, because I do not want to get sucked back in. I'm just being very careful with these White Sox. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like outside of like draft champions, like DCs, where I hadn't minded taking Fetty or Soroka or Kopech at those prices. I don't know. It feels a little bit dangerous in mains. And I feel like I was like looking at the early season schedule and I was like, no, there's no reason, because I'm going to hold them for nothing and I'm not really feeling it. And Fetty, by the way, in the KBO last year was absolutely electric. He was basically their best pitcher coming back here, and yeah, a lot of people like him. So we'll see what the White Sox do there. Interesting notes you made there about the Boston guys with now Lucas Giolito apparently could be gone for the year. They're in some big trouble there. But now you're looking at Nick Pivetta, Cutter Crawford, who we didn't even talk about, who is another one of those everyone's darling guys, and then Brian Bello. Those are your three. And so yeah, there are now two spots open for Whitlock, for Hawk, Josh Winkowski kind of on the outside looking in, but I don't think he's really someone that's going to get drafted.
Maybe Jordan Montgomery.
It makes sense. It really does make sense. I had another bold prediction, and that was that, and I don't think the Red Sox know what they're even really doing, but I thought maybe that Whitlock was going to lead this team in saves. Kind of felt to me like that might be a thing. Like, just move the guy to just let him close, man. I don't think Kenley's going to get through the season, unfortunately. So I think he'd be the best bet there.
Yeah. I mean, the only nice thing about these picks after, you know, even after pick 200, they're easily cut. You're not locked into them. What, you know, really got me last year was the Lance Lynn, who I drafted in the sixth round. I kept starting him. They had that, so I didn't have that sunk cost, and I thought he was better than he was. These guys, if they're not good, get rid of them, move on, find somebody better. You don't need to stick with the guy drafting this late. So if they hit early, great. You'll get burned by it sometimes. Sometimes they'll figure it out a little later, but more than likely, kind of cycling through these guys when they're struggling, you'll have more success than failures.
Yeah, and also a good thing to start looking at those early season schedules and looking what a week one lineup, like after the Seoul series, what it might look like for that first half week of the season, where the starters start to fall in, where maybe you might want to draft an extra reliever for that first half week and then drop them after. Considering your late round picks with like a Bruce Dar Gratterall who might sneak in a win for you. I'm thinking back to the free look games in 2019 when Hunter Strickland, this is pointed out by Jeff Erickson, Hunter Strickland got two saves before the season technically, like, you know, quote unquote, began. and I believe not a single save after, and the infamous rogue drafter from the 2019 main event.
He's back.
That's what I heard. Everyone's going to want to be lucky enough to fall into his league. But he took Hunter Cirklin, I think, fourth overall that year with the free look.
And he ran out of players in the 15th round on his sheet.
And then I think went to had a smoke break and never came back. So, yeah, we'll be looking forward to seeing him back. Be in my league, please. That's it. Next week, we're going to talk to everybody about relief pitchers. We're going to dive into the closers. I feel like there's like less kind of controversy or worry or concern about closers than ever before, than in at least in previous few seasons, which makes me think there's more chaos to come. So we'll talk about that. And then after that, we'll have one more podcast before we head to Vegas. So I'm excited, man, to see you in 2 weeks, and let's get her done.
It's hard to believe it's this close, man. I can taste that first cocktail in Vegas.
Oh man, I can't wait. Let's do it, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. If you do get a chance to, please subscribe, rate it, review it, good or bad. If you liked it, let us know. But a good review would be cool. For my co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.